Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and we'll be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We are out of July, which I think is probably one of the nicest Julys that I can remember in a long, long time.
It was very mild.
Very mild, especially compared to last year. And our sales figures in both stores show that too.
Oh, really?
Because, yeah, because people don't want to go out and dig in the dirt when it's 110 degrees outside. And I can't say as I blame them.
I think some of the production that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago in the garden might be attributed to the calmer, more mild weather.
It could very well be.
All the fruit trees did really well this past July.
No, we've had unbelievably good weather, and not over. We haven't had to turn the air conditioner on once this summer so far. Of course, now I'm probably going to have to turn it on through the end of October. At the rate things are going.
Well, August and September are typically warm.
Yeah.
That's our biggest water bill.
Well, you know what? And speaking of water bills, I just got mine last week, and I was looking at it, and I can't remember if I mentioned it on the air or not, but a couple of months ago, we switched over our old sprinkler timer to one of the Orbit Beehive sprinkler timers, which is one of the Wi-Fi sprinkler timers. That thing's a game changer. From a maintenance standpoint of your irrigation system, because I can be anywhere in the yard fooling around with sprinkler heads, and if I need to test it, I just pick up my phone, hit manual water, and the system turns on from anywhere in my yard. I can, and if I'm out in the yard and I see something that needs a little bit more water on a really hot day, turn on manual water. And it takes care of it. You can change all the programming and everything on your phone. You can set individual times for different zones. You can group zones together as far as programming. My water bill dropped about 20% for June and July.
Oh, wow.
Since I've had that system in place. Because I can fine-tune. I have changed some sprinkler heads here and there. But just the fine-tuning of it. And it's been amazing. I am really, really impressed with and Orbit. You can get them at Home Depot. I bought mine online at Amazon, but it's not what I would call necessarily professional grade,
right?
But for a homeowner, man, it works amazing. I was really surprised.
We have an old version of. That has every possible capability that you want, but it's not Wi-Fi connected. I mean, I could do intervals on zones. I can group zones together. Manual runs, as you said, but it's not Wi-Fi. So I have to walk across the property if I want to do what you just described.
Yeah. One of the biggest changes that I used with mine is you can add, I'm sure there's a finite number. I haven't figured out what it is yet. For a particular program, you can put the number of days in there, or you can do it. You could pick individual days. You can pick intervals. You can do odd days or even days. So that's relatively straightforward and pretty much the same as most sprinklers. But on those days, you can pick multiple start times for each one. So what, you know, in Scripps Ranch, we have horrible clay soil, so it doesn't drain well. So if you water for too long, the water either pools or it runs off. So what I did was I went through the different zones that I put together, and I put pretty short watering times, 2 to 3 minutes, but I put multiple ones about an hour to 2 hours apart. So it comes on for a little bit, gets everything wet, soaks in, and then it goes again. And I've also started doing that early in the morning. I think the sprinkler systems start coming on around 2 o'clock in the morning. So mm-hmm. you're not watering in the heat of the sun mm-hmm. where you're losing water to evaporation. The water gets soaked into the ground before the sun comes up and it sticks around a lot longer. It's made a big difference, a big, big difference.
You know, what's interesting is everything you just said. I think next week we have a guest that wrote a book about this kind of stuff. That'd be, yes. We need to bring that up with him as well, because he has his whole book was on precisely how much to water your plants, when to water based on your soil, your climate, techniques such as smart timers, like you just described. So that should be very interesting.
Yeah, that's our guest is going to be Richard Restuccia, who is the author of Water Wise Gardening. And he may just come in and completely blast everything that I just said, but we'll see. But, you know, I had pointed out in one of the early issues of the Sunset Western Garden book, I think it was 1954 issue. Yep. There was a whole section in that book, which has long been since eliminated from the Sunset Western Garden book, on how to water.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
I took that home and read that. That's a great section. Yes.
It's a very, very informative section. But we'll have to talk about that at some point in time too. Because it told you how to calculate how much water your lawn needs, and then how to set your sprinklers to give it that amount of water. Mm. So it was a very, very interesting article.
Yeah, we call that pulse watering in the trade, what you do, where you water, because if you water the point where things are just running off, it's doing no good whatsoever. So water it a little bit, an hour later, do it another 3 minutes. If need be, another 3 minutes, maybe in another hour. And then it's really allowing that to soak in and get the best use of all that water. As soon as anything runs off, it's just wasted.
It's wasted. It's absolutely wasted. So my big key for judging how things are working is I go down and look at the curb cuts and see how much water is coming out of the curb cuts. Mm-hmm. Ideally, I don't want any water coming out of my curb cuts where the drain lines drain from the yard out into the gutter out front. But I try to minimize the amount of water that's in the gutters out front, and it's been working very, very well. And it's super easy as the weather cools off. You can also put weather sensors into it. It keeps track of weather conditions. I think through it hooks up to the National Weather Service through Wi-Fi.
Oh wow!
You can. If you wake up in the morning and it's raining, you can pull out your phone and hit one button. Rain delay shuts the entire system down for a day. So
I would think if it was tying into the National Weather Service, it would do that by itself.
I think there's a smart watering segment of that whole programming that you can do that I haven't been smart enough to figure out yet. But yes, you can do that. Okay. And you can also
you can get a sensor.
You can base it on soil moisture too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's absolutely amazing what you can do. But as the weather starts to cool off, I can just pull up my phone and I can knock off just a couple of segments where rather than reprogram the whole thing, I just, okay, we don't need this watering here. We don't need this one here. Or you extend out the interval. It's a game changer.
I'm surprised that it's Orbit, to be honest. I mean, you know, I've always considered Orbit, not to slam them, but it's a substandard irrigation brand.
It's not a professional. You know,
not a professional grade.
It's not Hunter. Yeah. It's not Rainbow.
It's not Toro.
But it for the money, it does an amazing
mind if
job.
I ask how much that cost?
It was less than $200. It's a 16 unit station.
Wow.
And I'm only using, I was.
And is it outdoor mounted or indoor?
I have it mounted outdoors.
Okay.
I think they come in 4, 8, and 16 stations, and I have 12. So I either I had to buy 2 8s, or I bought the 16 and I have extras that I'm currently not using. So I think on Amazon, I think it was around $150.
That's a good
somewhere
deal
on there. Yeah. I mean, and if you could, especially in San Diego with the cost of water, it won't take long to, shouldn't take too long to recuperate at least at least part of that.
And we have a pending water increase coming up.
Oh, we always do.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big one this time.
We always do. We do have classes today in San Diego, August 9th. It's in San Diego, it's going to be a big one. So get there early. It's at 9 o'clock. It's going to be Plumerio 101 with Mike Atkinson, one of our most popular classes in either store that we teach. Mike does a fantastic job. We are in a perfect Plumeria season. So if you want to find everything, get everything you need to know to grow Plumerias, he's the guy to talk to. He's probably forgotten more about growing Plumerias than I ever knew. But that's going to be at 9 o'clock in the San Diego store today. In Poway at 9:30, it's going to be year round color in San Diego Gardens with, author Chuck McClung, who's been a guest here on the show. And we do carry,
both of his books,
both of his books. Yep. So if you want to hear what he has to say about, color year round color gardening in San Diego, get here at 9:30, grab a seat and listen to what he has to say. He does have very popular classes and does a very good presentation. So I would highly recommend that.
You know, you guys have quite a stable of very good speakers.
We try.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. I know in the Poway store, George has been very good about recruiting good speakers. For us.
They got tired of listening to five of us, the same circle of people. So we had to go out and
cast our net a little bit.
That's right. We have a deep bench now.
A little bit wider. George, you brought in some more dried goodness for us today. What did you bring in?
Capri and I have been going bonkers. As I alluded to earlier in this segment, how the trees seem to be producing quite well, much better than the last couple of years. And I attribute that to, obviously, they're more mature, but I think the weather really played a big factor in it. But I brought some Anna apples in that we put in the freeze dryer. We soaked them in lemon juice first so they didn't turn brown. If you get them in right away, they don't turn brown anyway. But anyway, I like them. And we brought in some, as your bride, Ken, called it, grape jerky, but it's grape leather. We took a bunch of we had pounds and pounds and pounds of grapes this season, and we made some leather with it.
Yeah.
You just put it in the dehydrator.
No, it's really good. I'm telling you.
You have to turn it into a slurry first?
Put it in the food processor, added a little bit of lemon juice, and I think like a tablespoon or two of honey we put in it for a little extra sweetness, and that was it. And then we cooked it for a good number of hours in the dehydrator, and then just rolled it up in some parchment paper.
It's very good. Very, very good. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. One of our previous guests that we've had on the show before, Randy Sipchak,
the spider guy,
local spider expert, was just on the news very recently, and he was talking about tarantulas. And apparently, we are getting into tarantula migration season,
or mating season.
Yeah, where they are on the move looking for mates. So. Right. For those of you that suffer from arachnophobia, probably not a good time of the year to be out and about in the backcountry because they are going to be around. Although I don't think we have the tarantula migrations in San Diego like they do back in, is it in Texas and Oklahoma, where they just come out by the tens of thousands and
cover it, blanket the roads? And
blanket everything. It must be something to see. I think I would prefer to see it from inside my car. But,
they also have rattlesnake roundups in Texas.
Yeah. You know, that's just not something I would particularly want to be involved with. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize there are tarantulas in the urban areas of San Diego.
Indeed. You see the tarantula hawks searching all the time.
Mm-hmm. You see them around. I have caught them in my garage in Script Ranch a couple of times where they've just wandered in. Uh-huh. And, you know, when you go out into the garage at night and you turn on the light and there's a giant, big, hairy black spider in your garage, it gets your attention. so they are around and they are out and about. So
We'll post that video on our Facebook page too. And Randy's actually going to be speaking in Poway in October, I believe, for another spider class, Spiders Good or Bad in Your Garden.
Yeah, very interesting guy. Yep. So if you missed the radio show, you could probably find it on
on the
podcast. Yep. But check out his class when it comes up. It should be really good. Just a note that both of our stores are going to close early on August 20th. We have an employee event that day, so we will be closing at 2:00 on August 20th. So make a note of that on your calendars. If you have stuff to do, make sure you come in before 2:00. At our Poway store, we've had over the years a number of feral cats coming in and out of the Poway store. They tend to hang around, I think probably mostly because there's a fair amount of rodents up here in Poway that they can feed on. But when we do find them, or find out that we have them, we take care of them, and we do leave some food, and we leave some food and water out. But we also work with the Feral Cat Coalition, and when we find out that we have feral cats, we trap them, and then we take them to the Feral Cat Coalition here locally and have them spayed or neutered. We also make a donation to them for doing that. And it is a pretty amazing organization, and we've been working with them for a number of years now. And last year, I just got their newsletter, and they spayed or neutered over 4,400 cats last year, which they calculate probably saved 24,000 births of kittens over the year, which is
for a single year.
Wow. Which is just amazing. And yeah, that number broke their previous record by 385 cats. I mean, that's an extra cat a day. And I don't think they're open 7 days a week. So it really is an amazing organization. And if you have feral cats that you're concerned about, go to their website. It's feralcat.com. They tell you what you need to do to safely trap the cats. You have to coordinate with them in advance before you trap the cats. Set up an appointment, trap the cat, and then bring it in. And then you have to pick the cat. You have to pick the cat up the same day. So and take it back to where you trapped it. So there's a number of steps that you have to go through, but they do everything they can to try to limit the population of feral cats in San Diego, and they do a great job, and we're happy to support them. As a matter of fact, we set up trail cameras in the nursery to keep track of what's going on, and we have another one that we're going to have to take care of at this point.
And the eating's good here, apparently
so. Mm-hmm. But what I can't figure out is, where do they come from? Because we're really not close to. We're not within what I would call wandering distance of a neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. There's no residential.
Yeah. Areas right next door. So.
And they all survived the coyotes. Okay. Up here.
I think so. We've had feral cats come and go. Mm. We have not found any evidence that they have not survived, but, The cat population does come and go. The one of the cats that we have had here, we recognize it. We've had it for a long time, and we can tell that it's been. That's another thing too with feral cats. You can tell if they have been spayed or neutered, because when they go in for the surgery while they're under, I think it's their right ear.
They
notch the top of their right ear. So if you see a cat that has the top of its right ear missing, a feral cat, it's been spayed or neutered. So,
Fight.
It's not shredded. They just cut it clean off the top. So there's no point on it.
Got it.
So that's how we can tell that one cat. And then is you the know that
you don't
need,
you don't have we, to trap them.
Yes, yeah. But therein lies the problem, because when you set the trap to catch the cat, you can catch one of the cats that you've already trapped, which has happened.
Or a skunk.
We haven't caught a skunk yet, but we've caught possums and we've caught raccoons. As a matter of fact, the first animal that we ever caught in one of the cat traps when we were trying to get them under control was a raccoon. And they tell you when you when you set the trap, you're supposed to cover the trap with either a beach towel or a packing blanket or something like that. So I had gotten some 3-foot by 4-foot black packing blankets. And we set the trap up. We have a couple of shipping containers on site that the cats had been hanging out in. Set the trap up, baited it, covered it with the black, packing blanket. And I came in the next morning and the packing blanket was gone. And inside the trap was a raccoon that was really mad.
Ooh.
And that raccoon had pulled the entire 3-foot by 4-foot packing blanket through the holes of the cage and shredded it completely.
My goodness.
There was nothing left of the packing blanket. So,
wow.
So we took the, we took the raccoon off into the far corner of the nursery and, wow. Let him go.
That's like letting go of the Tasmanian devil. Yeah. I bet
it's
absolutely.
It's interesting to say the least. Fortunately, they don't feel the need to exact any revenge when you let them go, but they just take off. But yeah, we've caught our share of possums and raccoons. Probably caught more possums and raccoons than we actually have the cats that were living here. But we've had good luck with that too. So anyway, feralcat.com, if you're interested in taking a look at what they do and supporting them, it's a great organization. And we certainly thank them for all the work that they've done for us over the years. For the month of August, it is the dog days of summer in both stores. And if you bring your dog into either store, and we welcome well-behaved dogs on leashes in both stores. Both stores have free pup cups available. You can make your own pup cup. It's self-serve. There's a refrigerator in each store that's stocked with whipped cream, and we even have some special sprinkles to put on top of them, dog-friendly treats. You're welcome to come in and give your dog a treat when you're in shopping. So, and if you want, you can take a picture of your dog enjoying the treat, and you can post it to our Instagram account at Walter Anderson's. We would be happy to see that.
That sounds like a dog hot fudge sundae or something.
That's kind of what it is. Yeah. Very similar. Very similar.
I need to know what's in the sprinkles, because I want a pup cup. I love whipped cream.
They're down there. You can go check it out. Yeah. Yeah. So that's going on for the month of August in both stores. As a matter of fact, I think I hear a dog down there barking right now. Yeah. So,
you know, you were mentioning feral cats, Ken. We don't have a feral cat on our property.
But you have a cat.
We have a cat. We have a bobcat now. And since we came back from London in May, we've had 3 sightings of this bobcat. Twice while I've been outside. Well, Capri and I were sitting on our front porch having coffee early in the morning and just walked right beside us. I may have mentioned that in the past. And about 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, was there, and I walked out and it sat and just looked at me underneath a Colvertaria tree while I was talking to it. And it was just sitting looking at me, and then it went on its way. And then this past week it was walking across our back porch again. So I think she, all cats to me are she's, dogs are he's, but I think she likes our property, and one of these days I'm going to pet that cat.
That's probably a good animal to have on your property to keep things under control.
You are correct. We were talking about that. We haven't seen a squirrel in 2 or 3 weeks now.
Wow.
They're gone.
No, speaking of rodents in your garden,
nice segue.
In our vegetable garden, I had put out some brand new 8-ball zucchinis, and I was out. I went out the next day, and I was working in the garden, and I looked down and like something's missing, and they were gone. I mean, they weren't just chewed off at the top; they were gone. Something had pulled them out of the barrels. And Melanie came out, and I was talking to her about it. And the barrels are on a 2x6 platform out in the garden. And Melanie looked down between the slats, and she could see gray brown fur moving around. And she goes, "Whatever it is, it's still under the deck." So we set up a tomcat trap, which I highly recommend. Mm. Super easy to set, easy to reuse, easy to clean. Really easy to clean. And the first night we didn't get anything. And then the next day, Melanie texted me. I was still at work. She goes, "Oh, we got something." And She said, it's big. And so she actually thought it was a rabbit. And so I got home and I pulled the trap out. It was the biggest rat I've ever seen in our yard. It was huge. And so I went and dispatched it over the fence into the green belt in front of our trail camera. And sure enough, that night, coyote came by and disposed of the remains.
Yes.
Wolfed the whole thing down in less than 3 minutes. Hmm. We were shocked. I mean, it was pretty amazing. So keep an eye out there for rodents in your garden, because they are there, along with some other things that we're going to be talking about when we come back. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We were talking about pests in your yard and how to control them. If you're not lucky enough to have a bobcat to control some of your rodents, the tomcat traps work extremely well, as we mentioned. When we were talking about citrus leaf miner on one of the previous shows, and how it hasn't been around, we spoke too soon.
Boy, did we.
Man, it came in like a wrecking ball. I mean, just the other day, a couple of days ago, I was walking through my side yard and I looked at our citrus, which had been absolutely perfectly clean. I was like, oh my word. Yeah. So now... I'm going to have to get on it.
I cussed you guys under my breath as I was walking. Because I think it was, Ken, about 2 weeks ago or so, you had said, you know what, I haven't seen a lot of yet. And we all agreed, citrus leaf miner. And similarly, we were walking through the garden and I saw that. I walked in the house and said, oh no, guess what we have? And a lot.
You just want to say jinx, you know, you shouldn't have said that.
Well, but you know, what's funny is in our yard, it's only, there's two citrus trees planted in the side yard. I saw it on one of them. I was in a hurry, so I didn't really get a chance to look at both of them. I'm sure it's on the other one too, if it's on one. But the other two that are planted farther out in the back, in the opposite corner of the yard, I spent more time out there and I haven't seen anything on them, but they don't have a lot of new foliage growing on them yet either. And it does attack, it attacks the new foliage. It doesn't typically go after the older foliage. So I'm going to have to get out and take a closer look. And for those of you that are not familiar with citrus leaf miner, it creates a silvery trail through the foliage. The first indicator that you'll see that you have citrus leaf miner, if you don't notice the silvery trail, is the leaves start to curl up. Similar to what happens when they get a severe aphid infestation or a whitefly infestation on new foliage. Citrus whitefly will do that too, where it gets real crinkly and gnarled.
That's certainly the negative side of citrus growing during this part of summer is the citrus leaf miner. On the other hand, this is a prime time to put citrus in. You know, we usually talk about planting in fall or planting in the winter with fruit trees, but I find that citrus and avocados really do well if you put them in the summer. Just make sure they get enough water. And I was at the Point Loma store Sunday helping my friend Julie and Siri pick plants out and everything. And we found a bunch of really nice charanuis down there.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, man, go out and get yourself a sumo. That is one good piece of fruit.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I came walking into the store the other day and it was walking past customer service and one of our associates was waiting on a customer and she stopped me and she said, do you know about anybody in San Diego that has a larger selection of dwarf citrus? I said, no. I said, honestly, I don't. I wasn't being facetious about it. But the fact is we stock as much of it as we can when it's available. So if we don't have a good supply of it, chances are that the other stores, other nurseries in San Diego are not going to have it either, because we're buying from the same people.
Right.
And when the growers start running out of stuff, And I've told people this. They say, well, how come they don't have stuff available? It's like, if they don't calculate it out right and they have a run on something and they sell out, it's not like they can go out into the barn and put a bunch together and put it back on the shelf. It takes a while. And that became very apparent during the pandemic, where growers they were running out of stuff. Mm-hmm. To the point where they started shipping small stuff just to try to
right to satisfy the need.
Satisfy yep. the need. Yep. And then some of them are our biggest supplier ran completely out.
Yeah.
They had nothing. And then actually just before they had nothing, they had gotten to the point where the only thing they had was 24-inch box citrus. And we never carry 24-inch mm-hmm. box citrus from that particular grower for a couple of reasons. One, because their soil mix is so dense and so heavy, it's like trying to lift up a 2-foot by 2-foot concrete block. But also the price. I mean, yeah. they're insanely expensive. And so we were... Granted, like I said, this was around the time of COVID. We were looking over the availability. The only thing they had was 24-inch box citrus. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know if we should get them or we shouldn't get them. The retail price on them was at least $600 at that time. I'm sure it's more than that now. They had 50 plants available of different varieties. We bought all of them.
Oh, my.
And we sold all of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was people were buying... People were buying citrus like crazy.
Yeah.
It was just amazing how stuff that we don't buy the 24s anymore for the most part because nobody buys them anymore right. because now there's the smaller stuff is available. But we were bringing stuff in that we normally wouldn't stock and we were selling it. It was crazy. So if you come into either of our stores and we don't have a huge amount of citrus available, chances are the other nurseries in town are not going to have a lot of citrus available either. And because of we don't buy just from one particular citrus grower. We have two or three different ones mm-hmm. that we buy from as the availability is there. So you'll find stuff in our stores that you typically won't find.
That's what I was going to say. Our selection is different.
Our selection is different. Yeah. So
it's certainly different than the big box stores. There you get four or five things. And also don't overlook buying things in liners. I mean, it takes years to get
a
5-gallon tree for sale. It takes years. But you can get a liner. You know, I call them test tube babies of citrus. And I've put those in my garden. And within 2 years, I will have from a little sleeve, a tree that's as big or better than a 5-gallon. And so don't overlook the small stuff if they're in liners. And we've got some really nice liners of avocados and some other things available. Because you put that thing in the ground, they'll explode.
My Shiranui was a liner. You and I bought a bunch of liners when we got them here.
And, we did bring some in.
Yeah, we put 5 or 6, 7 different liners in, and they're all producing like crazy. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, when we had the avocado liners in, I bought a couple of those, and I haven't killed them yet.
Give it time, Ken.
I know. They're in the same place where I have killed multiple avocados, but so far they're doing okay.
Hope springs eternal.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, John, you mentioned citrus. It's a good time to plant. You're also mm-hmm. teaching a citrus class coming up in about 2 weeks or so.
Yes. At the Point Loma store.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always a really popular class. And I'm going to be teaching on citrus at a couple of garden club events and also for the La Jolla Village. I mean, I almost want to go hold my little finger in the air when I say the Village Garden Club of La Jolla.
When in doubt, pinky out.
Yeah, pinky out, yeah. and people want to know how to grow good citrus. And so we equip them and help them. And speaking of that, one of my favorite tools that I push every class I do on citrus is the Bug Blaster.
Yes.
Which you can get at Walter Anderson Nursery. That is a game changer, folks, in terms of changing how you raise your citrus. And one of the issues we're seeing right now, they were actually about 2 months ahead of the curve this summer, and that's spider mites. Mm-hmm. I have never seen spider mites as severe as they are right now, and that's countywide. They're in everything. Really bad on citrus, on hedges. Japanese black pines are just coated. Take that Bug Blaster nozzle at the end of a wand. I love the dram wand. Don't buy the big box wands, but get a dram wand, put that bug blaster on the end and blast away the pests. You'll reduce your populations of scale and of mealy bug and also of spider mites by 3/4.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just using water.
Yeah.
But you have to wear your galoshes and your yellow raincoat.
You will be soaked at the end of that.
Yeah. It's going back to the citrus care. We did mention the citrus leaf miner and how to spot it. And the best way to take care of it, about the only way to take care of it right now, is spinosad, which you can get either from Bonide in the Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, which we've mentioned a number of times here on the air. It's an organic pesticide. It works very, very well. The horticultural oil, which is my go-to for citrus pests or just about any pests in the garden, doesn't work on citrus leaf miner unless you actually get the moths, which you really can't see. And it's not the moths that are doing the damage, it's their larvae. But those larvae, because they mine their way into the foliage, a contact spray like the oil doesn't take care of them. But the spinosad actually penetrates the layers of the foliage and gets into it almost like a systemic and takes care of the larva that way. And spinosad, where it's very good at controlling chewing insects. Mm-hmm. Insects that actually bite chunks off of the plant and chew on them. Unlike a sucking insect like aphids, white flies,
mealybugs,
scale, right. Those types of things. It's not effective on those. And it's also not quite as effective on spider mite, which is a rasping insect where it just kind of grinds away at the surface of the foliage. For those, the horticultural oil works fantastic.
It does work well.
And it's also organic. And the great thing about horticultural oil is, especially as you get later in the season, or as the fruit is starting to ripen on your citrus, if you have ripe tangerines or you have ripe oranges, lemons, whatever on your tree, you can go out and spray them with the horticultural oil. Go shut the hose off and immediately walk back while the tree is still wet and harvest that fruit and eat it. It doesn't poison insects; it suffocates them. And the great thing about that is they can't get immune to suffocation. So you don't have to worry.
And it makes
about
your tree look glossy. And
it does.
It really looks pretty when you're done.
It works beautiful. As an amazing leaf polish.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
but it's not going to clean up those ugly leaves from leaf miner.
Yeah. No. So the other thing that you can do to reduce the damage from leaf miners is when you see it first start, go out and trim it off and throw it away. Don't put it in your compost and throw it in the trash can. Or I guess you could put it in your green recycling bin, but I usually just throw it into the trash can and get rid of it. And that alone, not only does it clean up the look of the plant, but it also reduces the damage. And if you do spray with spinosad, you will be amazed. If you keep up with the regular watering and feeding, as soon as the new growth starts to come out, which it will come out pretty quickly, you'll have your old growth, which looks fine. You'll have some damaged growth. And then you'll have the new growth that comes out after the treatment, and it looks fine. Mm-hmm. So you can see the damage
subside.
Subside. You're listening.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, we need to take a
we need to take a break.
Take a quick break. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We were talking about some of the pests that you're seeing popping up right now, mostly citrus leaf miner and spider mites. But you were in the middle of a thought, and I cut you off at the end of the last segment. We were talking about spinosad.
You know, I was kind of waxing rhapsodically recalling Kelthane for spider mites. Oh, you remember that,
yeah,
Ken?
Way
so
back.
Some of us that are old enough, some of the old school chemicals that we, you know, Dow and all these, but no need to use the Kelthane. Yeah, you know, you can really do so much good with water and the bug blaster nozzle. But we were talking about spinosad being so effective for citrus leaf miner. and for chewing insects particularly. But what's nice is that's not a chemical. That's a microbial agent. It's a bacterium that attacks and kills these pests. And so I know a lot of people freak at the very thought of a tank sprayer filled with anything. Well, if you're using BT to kill caterpillars, which red hump caterpillars are just on the horizon perhaps, but also of some of the other pests we talked about, that's a very benign thing to use.
Yeah, it's very benign. It's very benign for a lot of beneficials. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly potent when it comes to caterpillars. So yeah. You do need to be careful,
yeah,
especially around milkweed and butterfly gardens, things like that. You don't want to get that stuff anywhere near them.
Right.
On tomatoes, for tomato hornworm, spinosad or BT work mm-hmm. outstanding to control tomato hornworms. As a matter of fact, we had a mentioned in an earlier show, we have a big pot full of the large leaf basil.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, one of the plants damped off and fell over. So I cut it off and brought it in because it was fine. It just rotted off at the base. Brought it in and put it in some water. Melanie said, I'll make pesto tomorrow. Mm. And she got up the next morning and came down. There was black pellets all over the counter.
Wow.
So there was a caterpillar on it that we hadn't spotted when I cut it back. So she soaked it in water, and sure enough, he ended up at the bottom of the sink. But yeah, spinosad or BT, it control caterpillars unbelievably well. BT only controls caterpillars. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the broad spectrum that the spinosad has, but if you're just trying to get rid of caterpillars, it's incredibly effective and just amazing. And it kills fast too.
And it doesn't have all the restrictions that spinosad has.
Yes.
So BT works really well for caterpillars, mm-hmm. and you can spray it as often as needed according to the label, but spinosad is restricted.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not only in harvest times, depending on the crop, but also in the applications.
Right.
And we always talk about citrus being six times a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you can use it for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we see stuff in the stores that people bring in, customers are bringing things in, insects, weeds, problems. But we're in the stores. So we're at the mercy of our customers to see what's going on out in the field. But John, you're in the field more than
every
we
day.
Are every
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see some lawn weeds starting to pop up.
Lawn weeds are going off right now. So oxalis is quite bad. Also, kikuyu grass. You know, it's great for elephants. It's not so great for your beautiful fescue lawn in La Jolla or Scripps Ranch or some of these other lovely areas. You've got to get the kikuyu. We used to use DSMA and MSMA, monosodium methanerzinate, mm-hmm. disodium methanerzinate.
Oh, you just made that up.
No, yeah, but that used to be available as a product called Image, which was the best stuff to knock down the kikuyu particularly, but it works on crabgrass. So you can use crabgrass and broadleaf weed killer, which is mm-hmm. available. I don't like to use chemicals. I'd rather not. But if you knock it down quickly and get it before it really expands, you can minimize your chemical use. The other thing we're seeing a lot of, you know, everybody wants to use beach pebbles now and big cobbles, mm-hmm. and they won't put any, don't put weed cloth under that, please. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hate weed cloth. Can I say, I'll say it three times. I hate weed cloth. I hate weed cloth. I hate weed cloth. But if you just have these big rocks out there, spurge by the thousands, you will just see, you know, how it hugs the ground, little spotted spurge. That's a carcinogenic plant. You know, when you go to pull it by hand, it's going to have a white sap. Yeah. I don't want to deal with
it's
that by hand.
It's a euphorbia.
Yeah, it's euphorbia. Is it Pulcherrima, I think?
Maculata isn't one
of them. Oh, maculata. You're right.
Spurge.
Yeah, spotted spurge. Yeah. You know, in order to knock that down, if it's in rocks like that, there's nothing you can do but a chemical. And I know nobody likes the R word, the dreaded R word. Can I say it? Roundup. Okay, don't use Roundup. I don't care. But you can use another R word. It's called Remuda. and that is straight glyphosate without the carrying agents and surfactants of Roundup. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like getting the effect without the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And you know, use your PPE, use it minimally. Don't ever do it to the point of runoff. But that's
use the Roundup minimally, not your PPE.
Yes, your PPE. Use
your PPE
excessively.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, it's a game changer in the sense it would take 5 hours to hand weed a little area, and I can hit it with a chemical in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it kills the root. So that's the other thing. Vinegar is great. You know, being in the business too, the only workers' comp issue I had in 6 years at the Botanic Garden, you know what it was? From vinegar. So people think vinegar's safe. It is not safe. It can burn. It's an acid.
Yeah.
And so and when it comes
to chemicals, it's also 30%. It's not the same that you're putting
in
your salad.
Household vinegar. Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's not household vinegar.
And so everything has some risk. So be very careful. Use it judiciously. But sometimes the right chemical used just once for the season will save you a ton of work.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where, you know, especially with crabgrass, which is a bear to control once it gets growing. Mm-hmm. One of the good things about crabgrass is it's typically annual. So it it dies out in the colder weather. Well, if you put a pre-emergent weed killer down on your lawn in January, before the weather starts to warm up, those pre-emergent weed killers kill the weed seed as it germinates. And it's not, and it doesn't just kill the crabgrass weed seeds, it kills any weed seed that's in your lawn. So that alone will give you a jump start on reducing or eliminating your crabgrass in the growing season. So that's another one to keep an eye out for. But you have to use it before it germinates.
It's very effective for Poa annua too, which can be the annual bluegrass.
Annual bluegrass, not Kentucky.
It can be a big weed problem. And so if you do the pre-emergence carefully, again, don't overdo it. Do it at the right time, but it saves application of other chemicals later.
Yeah. Now, I know there are some people that are big fans of weed and feed products. Scotts is one of the big ones. They have a whole series of weed and feed products that you can use where you put them down. It's a combination of fertilizer and weed control that you put down on your lawn. I'm not a big fan of them for the main reason that unless your lawn is 100% weeds, you're going to be wasting a lot of product and you're going to be putting down chemicals unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to use a broadleaf weed control to control weeds in your lawn, which within reason, I'm okay with it. Spot treat them. Mm-hmm. Just buy the broadleaf weed control either in a ready to use or buy the concentrate and save yourself some money. You'll pay for the sprayer within one or two applications. Mm-hmm. Mix it up and just spot treat those weeds and get them out of there. But don't spray your entire lawn.
Right.
There's no reason to cover your entire lawn with chemicals that are not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. Because if it doesn't land on a weed that it controls, it's doing nothing except putting more chemicals into your backyard. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason to do that. Yep. So I think the spot treating is much, much more economical.
Yeah, I can't use the weed and feed because we have a domesticated weed lawn. And so if I used that, I wouldn't have
exactly
a lawn.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And my lawn actually looks better this year than it has in a long, long time. But I don't go out and put a weed and feed on it because I know I would lose a big chunk of it. So I should go out and selectively control some things that are growing out there. But I haven't had a huge problem with broadleaf weeds this season. It's more the grass weeds, crabgrass in particular. The other one that's really tough to control is nutsage.
It's very tough to control.
Yeah. And there are specific nutsedge controls. We do have one here. They changed
sedge hammer.
We have that, but it's under a different name now. I can't remember. But that is effective against
it. That does work.
That's a tough one to get under control when it gets established in your yard. And you can usually tell that because it's a different color green and the foliage looks different too. And
grows faster too.
And it clumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are all things to watch out for.
The other thing with lawns, we're coming into the hottest months of the year for us. August and September are always the hottest. What we're seeing is people are starting to get dry areas in lawns. So don't overwater to compensate for that. Get your sprinklers adjusted well.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of times people have the wrong nozzle. It has a 15-foot half or something, and it's overthrowing, and it's not hitting next to the head. There's a great head that you can get from Rainbird And it has, it's called a U nozzle, and it will spray close in and above. And so you get two trajectories of the water, and that's an easy fix. And a lot of times on your pop-up, if you just change that, you can take care of the dry areas near the head. And so try to get your sprinklers dialed in when the hot weather comes, and don't waste water.
Yeah, no, and don't combine drip irrigation on a regular
sprinkler
sprinkler system zone. That does not work.
Those are all good topics for next week too. Yeah. We bring in our water expert.
Exactly. Yeah. Next week, Richard Restuccia is going to be joining us. He's the author of Water Wise Gardening. Don't forget, we have classes today in San Diego. It's going to be Plumeria 101 with Mike Atkinson. Get there early and get a good seat. That's a very popular class. That's at 9 o'clock in San Diego. And in Poway at 9:30, it's going to be year-round color gardening with in San Diego with Chuck McClung. In Poway at 9:30, year-round color gardening year-round color gardening in San Diego.
Year-round color for San Diego Gardens.
For San Diego Gardens.
There you go.
Yeah, but it's going to be in the Poway store. So just to eliminating confusion there. But Chuck McClung, published author. We have his books in stock. He's also been a guest on the radio show in the past. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We'll be back next week with another hour. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.
You're clear.